So that's been a big thing this year is taking the opportunity to really understand, you know, who I am as a person and what makes me tick. To come back to your point then about being able to remove your identity from, you know, your existing place of work, I think then it doesn't matter where you're working or what you're doing. If you're familiar with yourself and you understand who you are as a person, then it makes it pretty easy to drop yourself into different environments and different situations and be able to make that change well.
Well, good day and welcome back to the Humans of Agriculture podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Laleve, and as always, thank you for tuning in. This one was recorded on the lands of the Wadawurrung people down at Marcus Oldham in Geelong, and we're bringing back a previous guest for a bit of a check-in. Right back in the early days of 2020, I remember reaching out to Hugh Dawson. Time of year, summer, day, I can't quite tell you, but I know exactly where I was down in Barwon Heads. I pulled over on the side of the road. We had a chat while he was flying his chopper up in Beetaloo Station on the Barkly in the Northern Territory. At the time, Hugh was the head stockman on Beetaloo Station, and I was just absolutely blown away by how mature he was. He came on for a chat as part of episode 25, and I feel really fortunate to nowadays be able to call Hugh your mate and someone who I've had plenty of conversations with over the years. In that episode, we talked about what Hugh is up to and his passion for advocating for the northern beef industry. He was fairly settled in his role and had big aspirations for where his career would take him. Switching the chopper cab for a classroom and the stock camp for a shoebox of a bedroom, I'm pretty certain was not on his list of things he wanted to do. But fast forward to 2021, Hugh and I were fortunate to be finalists in the Xander McDonald Award. And from that, he's got a few different mentors and his perspective around further education slightly changed. So as all 23-year-olds, no, I'm completely kidding. At 23 years old, Hugh came up with his own succession plan for how he could make himself redundant and train the next person to be head stockman at Beetaloo. I've wanted to sit down with Hugh for quite a while, and so I thought with the end of his first year at Marcus coming round, I wanted to understand what changed between our last conversation. What led to the decision to go and study? What's the year been like? And with November underway, how's he managed to keep himself mentally and physically fit? One thing which really stood out for me was how Hugh chatted about how he's enabled himself to get familiar with who he is and what drives him, and how that's allowed him to push the boundaries of what he's truly capable of. So enjoy the chat. Hugh Dawson.
Take two.
Episode two. So when I was listening back to our first chat we had, like on the plane last night, I was like, my God. I was like, how good does the intro sound? I don't know what I was doing with the audio, but it sounds bloody awesome.
It was pretty clear too, because that was recorded on pretty average internet from a donga in the middle of the Northern Territory.
Over Zoom.
What are we at now? Episode...
Nearly 150, I reckon.
Holy dooly.
So, and I think we're probably saying hello to Sarah Dawson, who seems to be an avid listener and fan.
I was talking to Mum the other day. She was like, you know I'm Ollie's number one fan. I was like, yeah.
She probably have a top fan badge on Facebook, I reckon.
Well, I re-downloaded Instagram again the other day just to have a buddy look. And yeah, first thing I saw was a comment, Mum's comment on Humans of Ag post. I was like, oh, well. I can get back off social media again.
Well, Sarah will give you the rundown of what Hugh's been up to for the year, why he decided to go to university and everything else in between.
Yeah, and it took so long to get there.
But last time we chatted, Hugh, you were living up in the Northern Territory on Beetaloo. You're the head stockman at Beetaloo Station. And I think this is what we're going to flesh out. You were hell-bent on this idea that you go to uni and study engineering if you want to be an engineer. But you wanted to work in the northern cattle industry, so you thought five gap years would suffice. And, well, I'm fascinated. We're down in Geelong now, Wadawurrung country, and you've become a uni student. You've basically moved into a cubicle for the past 12 months.
Yeah, no, we have. We've come full circle. But I think, and to take it back to that episode, I reckon the analogy I used was something like, you know, if you did want to go and be an engineer, you'd sort of have to go to uni and then you'd get your degree and then you're starting block. And I think the cool thing with ag and probably the pathway I went down was that I finished school and when I decided to go on that gap year, then I was at the starting block, and now, you know, I'm a little bit further down the track, but I think the product of the somewhat infamous now gap year of 6 years allowed me to see where there were gaps in my knowledge base, and definitely highlighted, I think, the opportunities available in young people to forge a really, I suppose, successful career in agriculture, and the opportunity then to go out and be an industry professional in that career. And so that's how I sort of, I think, arrived to be at Marcus Oldham College in Geelong, where I am now.
And so you're counting this as another gap year as well?
Well, I think, can I call it two? No, someone asked me the other day, like, oh, what are you doing, you know, once you graduate? And I was like, oh, might do a gap year.
Oversees this stuff.
Yeah. But no, I think it's certainly a change of pace. It's and it's funny going from, I think I did it the best probably way I could have done it, in that, you know, you go out and you learn how to work and you sort of identify where there's areas that you don't know and you don't understand, so that when you come back, you've got your work ethics already there and you can so easily sort of slot in what you're learning to where that should be in your sort of more practical job. So it's been an interesting transition. The weather hasn't been the highlight.
Oh, it's been all of Australia this year, mate. It's wet everywhere.
Oh, it doesn't matter where you are on the East Coast. Always sunny in Elliot. But no, it's been good.
Tell me, I want to backstep. So you're on the station, and did you ever think you were going to go and do further education? Was it ever on your radar?
It's a good question. I think probably one of the biggest things for me was that I have always been interested in trying to identify areas of sort of personal growth and improvement and development. I think there's, you know, there's a lot to be said about, well, I think the greatest investment you can make is in yourself and in understanding sort of yourself and bettering yourself. Did I think I would go to uni? I think I definitely saw myself going and pursuing further education. I didn't know if it would be at uni or where it might end up.
Was it on your radar, or you were pretty content and happy climbing the ranks through working on the station, being head stockman, and seeing where that career took you?
Yeah, and I think that was, you know, that was probably a big thing for me, was just enjoying that process. And I believe then, and I still believe now, that, you know, you can go out and make a highly successful career without the need to go and study tertiary education. I think, though, in my personal situation, is I realise there's a lot to gain from, you know, compound learning and learning from others, and that just being a fantastic way to accelerate the process. I think the other side of that was, I sort of reached a point at Beetaloo where, you know, there probably wasn't the opportunity to keep going up. And then I needed to sort of take a step back and look at where I was, and probably assess where I wanted to be. And then through that process made it easy to sort of understand that, you know, going and learning about, the business, or how the sort of back end of a business works was going to help get me there. And probably, you know, I talk about, involvement with the Xander McDonald Award as being the real inflection point, I think, in my career. It was having exposure to that network and those people that had sort of taken a lot of the same steps before me to get to where they are, and that was probably what shed light on Marcus being a pathway to get there.
Do you think, because we were on the obviously finalists together as part of the Xander piece, and it's funny how, I guess, naturally you gravitate towards different people. Yourself, I guess you've built a bit of a relationship with George King over the time as part of it. I think Richard, I've found, has been incredible as a sounding board and mentor. But was there someone through that process that you saw, like, I really want to learn off them and I need to just like kind of pull them closer?
Yeah. Was there any one particular? I think you sort of take different bits and pieces from everyone. I think that's the beautiful thing about ag as an industry, and certainly, you know, probably over the last couple of decades, that there was no sort of set pathway, and that the people that are now leaders in industry have sort of very much forged their own sort of unique ways to sort of get to where they are. So yeah, again, it's exposure to that network and to sort of take little bits and pieces from a few different people, I think, is where I've seen or got the most value out of that experience, I think.
Did you grow your self-awareness off the back of that, Pete? Because what I find fascinating with you, Huey, is like at 22, you were like, okay, in 12 months' time, I'm going to step away and I want to go and do further education. So what I'm going to do in a business at 22 years old is go, all right, who's the next person that's going to take my job and how do I just become a coach, a champion of them for the next 12 months so that I make my job redundant so you can go and study? Where did that come from?
I think I'll credit Jane and Scotty Strong with that, who were who own and manage Beetaloo, where I was working, and they always talked about making yourself redundant. And I remember the first time I heard it, and it really resonating with me, and going, well, that just makes logical sense. You know, if you can make yourself redundant in a role, that just opens the door to be able to go and do, you know, something else, something, be it bigger or better, or just sort of left of center from where you are. I just think that sort of opens the door for opportunity. And I think maybe that's, like, I've always looked for opportunity. I think that's something that's probably a strength of mine, and it just made it really easy to do. So when that time came and I identified the need to go and, you know, make that next investment in myself, it was just logical to try and identify who could sort of succeed, sort of me in my position, so that business could keep going on. And you know, it's interesting talking to George and Lindy, and they talk about the law of reciprocity. So you know, what you do for others will sort of be returned to yourself. And I think that it is important when you're in a position, especially working in a family business, that, you know, you're treating that business like your own. And I just think about, you know, how would I want one of my employees sort of exiting my business? And I would hope that they can walk away, you know, really satisfied with their experience, but also, you know, not leave a huge mess to clean up. So it was sort of funny. There were a lot of times last year where I'd sort of finish a day flying and be like, oh, I'll go and see what everyone's doing in the yards. And you'd land and jump out and walk into the yards and you'd be sitting around with your hands on your hips and go, well, shit, I am pretty redundant now. So, and I think there were, you know, it sounds rosy, but there were challenges that came with that. I think there were a few instances where you sort of go, well, am I making the right call here? And I think the other thing to think about is, you know, that was and still is a job that I absolutely love doing. And that for 6 years I worked to get to a point. And then, you know, all of a sudden you're standing on the edge of a cliff and you're about to take the next step and you're going, oh, what have I done here? But I think, and you know, I've talked about it a bit, is the value in making yourself uncomfortable. And I think that's been the greatest takeaway from coming down here to a completely foreign environment with new people, is how much you can learn about yourself by putting yourself in an uncomfortable and unfamiliar position.
Tell me on that. Did you, in the early days coming down here, did you potentially regret it? Did you think, like, was your identity tied to Hugh from Beetaloo Station, the chopper pilot and advocate for Northern Australia?
Yeah, good question. I think I did quite a good job to detach that.
Can I ask how?
You can ask how. I don't know if I have a good answer for you. I think I've become quite reflective, certainly in the last couple of years. And, you know, I think having set up that succession plan, for me to be able to walk away from Beadlew and be confident that it was in, you know, good hands in Charlie Davis and Will Donaldson and the guys that are there now, made it easy to sort of look back and go, well, you know, we left everything on the table and now we're just going into a new chapter and there's everything to play for. And so I think the other point too is that being really comfortable to go back to the bottom and to start again and to see that as being, again, an opportunity to learn and to grow from that sort of baseline. And so it was interesting, especially having done, you know, quite a bit of work at Beadlew to sort of not change the culture, but certainly to see a shift in the culture there, to come into a place of new culture and to sort of take a step back and not feel like you need to be at the front or driving that, and just to really, yeah, I suppose, come. It was a nice grounding experience. Probably didn't answer your question there at all, but
no, I think, yeah, it's interesting how you were able to detach it and, well, just be Hugh essentially at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think that was a there's a lot of it alleviates a lot of pressure, and I think is a nice point there where you can take stock and sort of look at, you know, what are my strengths now away from that environment where I was really comfortable. What do I still have, and what do I need to sort of develop now to get to that next step? And I think it was sort of funny and having been exposed to social media and media of all types in the last sort of 6 years, was that then you do start to meet, you know, a few different people and you get it now, I'm sure, where they're like, oh, I know you. It's like, well, do you really know me? And I think that was probably something for me was made me take a step back and go, well, actually, how well do I know myself? And so that's been a big thing this year is taking the opportunity to really understand, you know, who I am as a person and what makes me tick. And so it's probably to come back to your point then about being able to remove your identity from, you know, your existing place of work. I think then it doesn't matter where you're working or what you're doing. If you're familiar with yourself and you understand who you are as a person, then it makes it pretty easy to drop yourself into different environments and different situations and be able to make that change well.
In big news from us, we're excited to welcome Rabobank as a partner of Humans of Agriculture. So, who have we got from Rabo this week?
G'day. My name's Angus Gidley-Baird. I'm the Senior Animal Proteins Analyst with Rabobank Australia. Just like our great friends at Humans of Agriculture, we also have a podcast channel. And this month, I've caught up with my colleague, Lance Zimmerman from the US, to understand what's going on in that US cattle market. The US is very important for Australia. It regained its position as our largest beef export market last year. And what happens over the next 12 to 24 months over there is going to have a key influence on the Australian cattle market. Tune in to listen. Search for Rabo Research Australia on your favourite podcast platform and keep up with the latest agri trends. See you at Beef.
Do you think, I'm thinking back to last year when you decided that you'd cut right back on drinking and those aspects of your life. I'm interested coming into like a university environment in that, like, the expectation that you set of yourself, and I think as you're saying, knowing yourself and who you are, what was it like coming back into that scene?
Yeah, and to add to that, I think I'd just sold my Hilux that I'd spent a bit of time on doing up, and you know it was pretty flash. Sold it at the start of the year, and so I had we had a little silver Corolla that Mum and Dad got for Gus and I when we were in Year 12. So it'd be a bloody 8-year-old car now. So I'm driving up the driveway to Marcus in this silver 2000 model Corolla, going, oh my God, what am I doing? Get into the car park, it's Land Cruiser Hilux, Land Cruiser, Land Cruiser, Land Cruiser Hilux. And I think and even...
Road bike on the roof too.
Yeah,
let's not forget that.
I had my push bike in the car. And you do have to be pretty comfortable with who you are and confident, I think, in yourself that... And that comes just from time, I think. But has been a massive strength to have this year, and I think what made that possible for me was really working out sort of what I wanted to do going forward, and that cut out a lot of the noise and a lot of the sort of materialistic sort of superficial stuff, brought it back to the real sort of fundamental basics, so that, you know, I can now look at myself and go, well, you know, if I strip everything back, what do I still have? And if it all goes wrong tomorrow, will I be able to get back up the next day and you know, keep on plugging along? And that's been a pretty powerful thing. And I think to do that, and this comes from the idea comes from sort of Dan Allen and Eddie Ross from Trademark, talk about preventative maintenance and seeing a professional. And that's something I've done this year is once a month check in with a professional and talk a little bit about sort of strategy as to, you know, how to set up your time commitments, but also for me, you really try and drill into, you know, why I have certain tendencies. You know, we're chatting before, I have a tendency to sort of avoid conflict, and it can be the most minor of situations. But that investment in really trying to drill into why you do what you do, and that helping you understand who you are as a person has been, yeah, one of the greatest investments I think I've made so far this year. I can't recommend that highly enough to anyone.
And was that just something you just decided to do off the bat?
Yeah, but I think again, it was hearing people who, you know, present as being, you know, having it all together and really successful in business, hearing them talk about the value in doing it, and then I think finding the confidence then to go and seek professional help in a situation where you really, you know, don't need, you know, you would usually go and seek professional help in a crisis situation or if you're really struggling, you know, stereotypically. But I think when everything's sort of going well, that's almost the best time to go and see someone to then start forming that relationship with a professional, so that when they can see that your behaviour's changing, then they can really drill in and go, well, you know, what's changed in your sort of situation for your behaviour now to change with me? Has been fascinating. But yeah, it was seeing someone else go first, and I think that's why, you know, I'm pretty happy to talk about it now, because I think it's just something that we can all benefit from. I think if everyone, you know, can move away from needing and craving that materialistic substance to feel like they can fit in, then we'll all be better off for it.
Sure, Huey. Jesus Christ, it's been a transformational year. I think you've already touched on, Barry, making yourself uncomfortable, the role of self-reflection this year. Following on that point that you're just talking about, you decided to remove yourself from social media completely, except for LinkedIn, to stay in the network. Drivers behind that?
Yeah. So I told myself, I was like, don't make up any more stupid analogies, but I think...
I'll give it to
I've
us,
got
Huey.
One. I've yeah. got one. No, I think about it as, you know, I think it's probably safe. We're in an agricultural audience. You know, we hear about the leaky barrel and sort of propping up staves in the leaky barrel to keep that full. And I think about it as almost being like the opposite of the leaky barrel. What barriers can I take away so that my output, so that I can achieve the maximum flow of output? And yeah, I think that probably, you know, goes back to reflection, but also, you know, having a pretty clear structure around how I want to achieve, or the goals I want to achieve, And then going back and looking at what's going to help me get there and what's not. And I think, you know, social media, and I've been a huge advocate for social media and still am, and talking about it this morning, you know, the fact that we're here together is a credit to social media. But with the current sort of level of workload and other time commitments, it was just something that I went, right, is this helping me get to where I need to be? And at the moment, it was something that, you know, I had to make the decision to cut out. And it's freed up, yeah, a lot of time. But then obviously you don't have that as a, you've got to take stock and work out what's gonna, what you need in the moment, and what you can return to. And yeah, I'll get back on social media one at some stage once I got this degree out of the road, I reckon.
Cool, mate. I feel like I'm talking to Troy instead of it when Troy was at uni. So I think if we just keep following and chatting regularly, I feel like the conversation I had about with Troy when he was at university and he was talking about what he gave up. Obviously, he still had a lot of fun, which it sounds like you're doing, but also just utilising that opportunity. He was undertaking a cadetship at that time, but you in the background, you've got your own little ideas and business things that you're looking at. I want to... two things. What has been most challenging about coming in to back into full-time education? And then off the back of that, what's something that's really surprised you from it?
Biggest challenge for me this year has been time management. And I think I knew that would be the case. I probably didn't expect there to be a need for the level of time management sort of strategy. But I think, again, that it probably goes back to the benefits of having worked for a couple of years prior to coming down here. It is a high workload, but it's manageable when you can sort of identify and implement good strategies to manage that time. I think to talk to challenges has been to be comfortable with the quality of the work you're doing, and I think another big challenge has been actually saying no. I think last time I was on the podcast, we talked about saying yes to everything and then just working out how you can sort of make that work. Big challenge this year has actually been understanding that, you know, if I keep saying yes to everything, that I'm not going to be able to deliver to that quality that I was just talking about then. So yeah, understanding what's achievable and then making the time available to deliver that to a level you're happy with. Which has been hard, because when you are someone that looks for opportunities everywhere, to then stop when there is an opportunity and say no has been really hard for me. But I think that probably goes to balance as well, and finding balance and what that looks like. I think one of the most incredible things about Marcus is the people you're here with. And I think it would be easy to focus on your academic studies, but not engage in the sort of social aspect of being on campus and being with 160 like-minded people, you know, 24 hours, 7 days a week. I think half of the value in the course is the people you're here with. And
90%.
90%.
90%. I was going to say, it's an easy place to leave your academics behind and focus on the other side.
And that's it. So it's finding the, as a direct answer to your question, time management has been everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just finding that balance.
I wish I had that when I was here. By God, I wish I had it now. So you've got summer holidays coming up, Huey. Do you just want to come and help me get my life in order?
Yeah. It's that time management consultancy or something.
Call it an internship.
Yeah.
Call it even, I guess. Well, a couple other things. We've got, obviously, Movember. You're And you've got a deadly mo, actually, when people say it.
Yeah.
What? You've done it over a couple of years, and God, yours absolutely
puts me to shame.
Mate, mine is shocking. To be honest, in other years, I've used a little bit of...
mascara.
Well, a bit of tint to help it make it darker. Anyway, this is the year I haven't done it, so... I'm looking forward to shaving it off, but it has been starting conversations. But for you, men's health, Movember, why do you get involved in it?
I think it's a great cause, and yeah, rocking the handlebars once again. I think the and the reason I love Movember is a piece around raising awareness for men's mental health in particular is you can't avoid it. And, you know, you think about if you have a broken arm, you end up in a sling or with a cast on. It's a very clear visual indicator that you're not, you know, physically at 100%. With mental health, you don't have that visual indicator a lot of the time. And so when you do have a dirty, great big moustache on your face, it's pretty easy for people to pull up and go, hey, what's with that? So I think just that understanding around the fact that, you know, come December when everyone's, you know, moustaches are hopefully gone, that there is still that underlying, not issue, but that there's still a lot that you don't see, I think, going on, and that you know, it shouldn't just be in the month of November or on Are You Okay Day. It's a conversation that needs to be happening 365 days a year, and can be as something as you know, checking in on your friends, or, you know, it could be a brother or your dad, or and doesn't have to be isolated to men's mental health either. You know, it's something that affects all of us, and I think I've chatted a little bit about it before, but it doesn't stop at mental health. I think mental health or physical health, it all flies under the same banner, and that they do complement each other really well. And you know, again, on the self-development piece, it's probably something that when you do start to increase your workload, it's really easy to sort of put it in the background, and I know that I've sort of been caught in the past where you do try and put on that facade and make it look like everything's sort of humming on the surface, but underneath you sort of you can find that, you know, you feel like you're drowning a bit. So goes both ways. I think understanding that for everyone there's a lot going on that you don't see, and then taking the time then to have that empathy to check in on everyone around you, but also that there is so much in being able to share with what is actually going on for you as well with other people, it is so powerful to be able to reach out to someone and say, hey, I'm actually, you know, I've got a bit on at the moment. I need could just be a yarn, or need a hand to get something done, or whatever it might be. But that's there, and that's a good conversation to have.
Oh, yeah. And so where are you at the moment?
Well, handed in the case study yesterday. So we had about, I think the last 2 months have just been, it's been amazing, just running absolutely on the limiter. But I think the last 2 months as well have been really enjoyable to see the product of, I think, that work that I've put in trying to develop myself to get myself to a level where I can sustain a high output, to have all the pieces then line up and to be able to manage that and not fall into sort of burnout, which I think for the last couple of years you get to sort of November, December, and I've been absolutely shattered. So I think for me it's nice to see that there's tangible proof now that putting that work in developing yourself making that investment in yourself does pay dividends in the long run.
And so what are you doing over the summer break to fill that cup back up?
I'm pretty I've got a bit on, heading up to George and Lindy up at Carcor, the Savo, and then so swing off a branding cradle for a little bit, branding a few calves, which will be good, and then heading over to Western Vic, got a wedding in Tassie, and then I think be back home mid-December, and Gus, who's my younger brother by 3 years, will be back from America, so spend the month with him and mum and dad at home. Hopefully find a bit of quiet time. I got asked the other day if I do sit still, and I thought I did, but I'll try and find some time to sort of, yeah,
find a book or something.
Take stock and look back at what a year 2022 has been. I reckon it must be the bloody fastest on record yet, but certainly find time to sort of, yeah, appreciate what's the water that's gone under the bridge.
And so for next year, what's the plan for you?
Next year, sort of, I suppose, keep building on what we've learned this year. Finish this degree would be that's sort of
the number one,
the big ticket item. But just keep trying to build on that sort of knowledge base. And you know, I think it's funny. There's a lot of busy people who don't seem to get a lot done, and I know I've been guilty of, you know, saying before that I've been very busy. So, just continuing to try and make sure that work is translating into something meaningful, I think will be a big one for me, and we'll see where that lands us.
Beautiful. One last question for you, Huey. I'll be wondering if it's changed. You get the chance to go back to your Year 10 class. What's your advice to them now?
That is a good question. I think I was stumped on this last time. Just bloody enjoy it. Enjoy, like, there is just so much good to take out of every day. And I think if you have the mindset that there is, you know, everything either happens for a reason or there is a good reason for everything happening, you know, even in the face of it being a pretty significant adversity, that, you know, there's an opportunity to learn and an opportunity to grow, I think it's pretty much impossible to not enjoy life. We just have so much opportunity in front of us, and I don't know, that's something I get pretty easily excited about. But I think with, you know, what we see on certainly mainstream media and in the news, it can be pretty easy to get sort of down on everything, be it, you know, wars overseas or weather sort of crisis in Australia or, you know, wherever you are in the world. Just being able to sort of take it back and look at, well, what's actually, you know, affecting me in my day, and just how lucky we are to sort of do what we do and live where we live, I think is just appreciate everything.
Beautiful, Huey. Well, as always, mate, I absolutely love our chats. I think last time we were on the phone, it was about an hour and a half longer than this, but enjoy your summer holidays. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, Al. I look forward to it.
Well, I think, like, I every week get a different take because I'm in the conversation and stuck in it. And I try and listen back to every episode in the car as I'm going. But this is the first time in a little while that we can have someone else give their take on it straight afterwards. So, Maya, you've been chief editor this week. You've listened to Hugh's combo and pulled this episode together. So I'd love to hear, what did you take away from the episode?
Yeah, so Hugh's conversation was a super interesting one, and yeah, just knowing his age and just the way that he spoke so candidly and openly about his own mental health, I think was really impressive. I thought that he really kind of called upon all of his male peers to be more vulnerable and candid about how you're doing in life.
It would be fascinating to listen to where he was in 2020 and then listen to where he's now, because I still can't believe Hugh's age and just what he's done. And I reckon it'll be good to have him in Geelong for another year next year at Marcus Alderman, see where he goes, and I think we might just try and grab him in here for his uni holidays. See you next week.